Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Despite what you've been hearing, aging isn't a disease, but it has become a diagnosis. Various symptoms that crop up as people age have become conditions that are being treated with drugs. What a mistake! Primary among these is menopause. First, there were horse estrogens and synthetic estrogens, and now those are deemed to be dangerous, so there are drugs. Drugs for your bones, drugs for your mood, drugs, drugs, drugs. But wait, it's not a disease. So what is menopause? Well, it's a change that occurs as women age. It varies greatly from individual to individual. It's often simply unbalanced hormones. It's worsened by stress, and there are things that can be done to help women maintain health and vitality, things that aren't heroic, that don't require drugs or a diagnosis. So today I'll be discussing menopause and hormone balance, imbalance, and balance. Stay tuned for something different from what you've been hearing from doctors and books. First of all, it's always a good idea to remember when you're talking about something like a condition or a confluence of symptoms that relate to something your body's doing, that your body inevitably does things for a reason. Everything that the body does is for a reason. And I particularly like talking about menopause because there is so many different kinds of opinions out there about what it's about and how it should be handled. And there's an awful lot of fear and controversy around it as well. Menopause simply, if you just look it up in the dictionary, it means pause of menarche or end of menstruation. It means no periods. But as most of us know, it's not just a symptom of aging. Amenorrhea, which is also the cessation of menstruation, can happen at any age, and is particularly it's particularly a symptom of stress or being extremely underweight, which is also a symptom of stress. After all, what is aging, huh? I mean, it's wear from accumulated stress. That's what aging is. It's psychosocial stress, nutrient deficiencies, lack of sufficient recovery and rest, illness, toxic exposures, pollution, fear, injuries, surgeries, depression, hyperarousal, pharmaceuticals. Kind of looks like the front page of the newspaper these days. And it can be accelerated. Aging and stress can be accelerated at any age, so you can sort of drop into your life at any point in time and accelerate your aging process. Remember that the word stress really the term only started getting used maybe 150 years ago when hormones started to be studied, and the word was brought in from metallurgy, and it has to do with how metal is treated, to how it's tempered to become stronger, and so the forces that are presented to it, including oxidation and rusting, has to do with how strong it is. So the stressors and oxidation and rusting, if you think of it that way, from oxygen, is something that we are prone to and vulnerable to throughout our lives, and it is part of what causes aging. Changes in the skin, in the hormone levels, and all of these things. It's stress. It depletes, and remember, I'm not going to sort of go on about stress because I've done so many shows on stress, but it, as you may know by now, it depletes your body's resources and it skews and lowers your critical hormones. So it has a profound effect on your sex hormones. And stress clearly isn't a good time for reproduction. So it makes sense that when you're under chronic stress, when you're vulnerable a lot, as we all are during these modern times, that your body will get the signal that this is a dangerous time and it's not a relaxing time. And it may make it very difficult for people to conceive. It may make people more infertile. In fact, it not only may, it does. So it often lowers hormones and causes a loss of bone, muscle, functionality, and vitality. And this is in both genders, and it happens at any age. So when we talk about menopause or andropause, like I said, it's become a sort of diagnosis, but it's important to remember that it isn't just a diagnosis, it oughtn't to be a diagnosis. It's really a word that we've come up with to talk about the end of menstruation, usually occurring later in life. Andropause meaning the loss of androgens or male sex hormones like testosterone. But this is a stress response that can occur at any time in your life. Now, most of you probably know by now that the production of your hormones comes directly from cholesterol. That's the raw material for sex hormones. And not surprisingly, your cholesterol levels go up with age and in response to stress. So how duh is that? I mean, it's very intuitive. And yet, people are still having cholesterol-lowering drugs and statins waved under their nose. And the values, the acceptable values for cholesterol levels keep getting lowered by the people who are in charge of deciding how, you know, the AMA and various organizations and drug companies are influencing them, how high your cholesterol ought to be. Well, normal cholesterol for a person around 50, 55 is going to be around 250. And this was well-known information back 20 years ago when they started fiddling around with the acceptable levels. And their decision at first was that if you allowed people to go to 250, they wouldn't be compliant if they were at 300. They'd say, oh, well, you know, it's like when you're driving, you're supposed to be driving 55, and that means 65. So they lowered the allowable level to 200 at first. And now, as you may notice, it's down, you know, it's supposed to be like 150 or something, a very low. And there's all this discussion about good and bad cholesterol. Cholesterol, especially in women, and I would say in men too, if you really look at the research, there is no heart disease in women as a result of high cholesterol. And just so you understand, plaquing that occurs that causes, and actually there's controversy about whether it actually causes an ischemic heart attack, because the heart attack usually occurs after a clot has gone. The clot actually sometimes happens after. But when these plaques have been examined in the sad case of an autopsy, they're full of inflammatory cells, not cholesterol. So it's, you know, and clearly the statins do affect inflammation, but your life, your behavior, your stress levels, and even your sex hormone levels and ratio will predict how much inflammatory cells. Because if you remember what I said at the top, aging is a result of stress or stressors or, you know, the wind on your face affecting your skin. You know, the fact that you're an oxygen-breathing creature means that you're vulnerable to oxidation or the kind of rusting that happens to anything that's weathered by the air. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't breathe. It means, or breathe deeply. It means that you should do all of those things. But there are balancing things that help to protect you so that this process is slowed down. So that's what we're talking about. So inflammatory is related to stress. Inflammatory cells are a symptom of stress. The symptoms of menopause or andropause are caused by loss and imbalance of the endocrine system hormones. So remember, it's not just loss of them. You know, in women, the ovaries stop producing. It isn't always that simple. It isn't always so simple that the ovaries simply stop producing. Part of it has to do with a loss of balance between the hormones, a proper ratio. And this includes not only the sex hormones, but the adrenal hormones, your eek hormones, your hormones, the stress hormones that come into play when you have to move out of the way or fight your way out of a situation which could be a situation where you're left sitting in a chair fighting with somebody in a meeting, your body doesn't know the difference, or in traffic. And your thyroid, which is your metabolic conductor, and it's very vulnerable to rises, high levels of cortisol, which is the staying power catecholamine. It's the stress hormone that moves in after adrenaline, after the initial eek. It's the one that carries you through and helps you move out of the way, or as I've said so many times, gets burned up by exercise and various things. If it stays too high, it causes havoc with your thyroid hormone. If it's too low, it causes havoc with your thyroid hormones. So all of these work in concert. They're all, you know, it's this big ecology. The body is this giant planet. No, actually, we're a small planet. I just watched Horton Hears a Who, and he says, remember, a person's a person, no matter how small. And he talks about the fact that we may be tiny. Maybe something else looking over us that's larger, and maybe the Earth is that. But anyway, we're very much a little Earth ecology. So as we are finding out more and more every day, nature bats last, and that's the fourth law of ecology. And it's true with your body as well. All of these systems are related to each other, and if one domino goes down, you will find that there will be a downstream problem. So the first thing to consider when a woman is approaching menopause, and we're talking primarily about menopause here instead of andropause. We did do a show recently on testosterone. If people are interested in that, go to the website and there are ways to find it. But today's show is primarily about menopause. And the first change that occurs, and often this happens a good 10 years before a woman's periods stop. And this, of course, will vary enormously from woman to woman. Some women will stop menstruating in their late 40s or even early 40s. There's some kind of genetic component to it to some degree. And other women still have periods like at 55, sometimes up to 60. They're very different. But even so, in the years prior to actually stopping menstruation, your progesterone levels go down. The estrogen often doesn't go down as sharply, as quickly. The first thing that happens is progesterone goes down. So quickly, a reminder that women make three different estrogens, and I will unpack those in a moment. Progesterone, testosterone, and then, of course, there are the adrenal hormones, the cortisol, and the DHEA, and then there are, of course, more things that I'm not going to talk about because they're more subtle and more complex, but they are more nuanced forms of catecholamines, of stress hormones, and then insulin, which is the hormone that, like cortisol, moves sugar molecules, glucose molecules around your body in stress, for its deposition for metabolism. Cortisol being the one that comes up specifically under stress and has a very particular effect. And insulin is there to just pack away glucose or put it someplace where it can be used right away, like your muscles, or stick it in your liver for storage. The insulin is in response to a blood sugar spike, or just anyway helps you do that. So that's a hormone too. They're all hormones. So progesterone is a hormone that balances estradiol and other estrogens. Estradiol is, of the three estrogens that women make, it's the strongest estrogen, and it's the one that predicts whether a woman will have obstreperous or uncomfortable menopausal symptoms like dry mucosal membranes in her vaginal canal, or hot flashes, headaches, mood disruptions, anxiety, sleep disruptions, insomnia. And estradiol tends to be excitatory, so it tends to be energizing. It also tends to ramp up anxiety a bit and emotions. So this idea that women are more emotional than men is not fictitious. although it varies according to women's estrogen levels. Women who tend to be very high in estrogen tend to be more that way, tend to be more emotive, more expressive of their emotions, and more nurturing. That's, of course, a broad generalization, and as we know, all generalizations are false, including this one. So just to remember that the hormone has that characteristic, and it is balanced by the other hormones in a woman's endocrine system, primarily progesterone, which is sedative and calming, and testosterone, which has a more mediating or smoothing out of the emotional terrain in women and men, and it's energizing as well. So the progesterone going down first is one of the things that makes the 10 years before menopause a time when women seek some help, because their moods are shifting, and even as they're still menstruating, their menstrual periods are becoming more difficult. This is a loss of progesterone and not a hard thing to fix, as you will discover. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm doing a solo show today on menopause, the mysteries of menopause. And I'm hoping that at the end of this hour, you will have an extremely different feeling about this process. So first, to go down progesterone, loss of sedative, calming, balancing sort of effects. Women in these early stages tend to be nervous and anxious and not sleeping well and having bizarre periods. Women who are extremely high in estrogen and very low in progesterone, we call this, as you've read probably in books, estrogen dominance. Dr. John Lee, MD, the late John Lee, MD, in all of his books, like What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause, discusses this phenomenon. So it's very helpful in the very early stages for women to use topical, and I'll explain again, I'll go over administration of hormones, but topical progesterone to help with this, and it really evens things out, and the dosing will vary, but women who are very high estrogen tend to have extremely aggressive, almost hemorrhaging-like periods as they reach the end of their menarche, or the end of their menstruation. And women who are moderate or low in estrogen will tend to sort of have their periods just sort of whimper out and disappear one day. The question of whether or not somebody will have really severe symptoms, like lots of hot flashes and whatnot, is usually going to have to do with how low the estrogen goes down. The loss of progesterone is the one that causes lots of PMS, which gets worse toward menopause, and this unpleasant, wired, anxious kind of quality, and that is eminently fixable. Now, one thing that does happen in this early stage when mood is disrupted and women feel like they're distracted, they can't think, they're distracted, and this is going to the thinking is going to come from the estrogen. So the high estrogen women will mostly need a little progesterone. The women who are getting low in estrogen quickly will discover that their brain isn't working very well, and they're getting depressed and achy and all sorts of stuff. So one of the problems that can happen during that period is that people tend to look toward ways to medicate themselves. Sometimes they end up in a doctor's office with an antidepressant, which is a nasty way of handling your mood, I think, because of the downstream effects of these antidepressants. And they certainly don't address the underlying problem of a hormone imbalance. But what people will do sometimes is attempt to medicate themselves using lots of stimulants, drinking a lot of wine, or eating a lot of starch and sugar. One of the problems with this, as I've said so many times before, is that self-medication with comfort food to attempt to improve your mood and your energy is going to, in the long run, make the progesterone levels lower still. And in young women who have hormone imbalances, which is part of what this show is about, it's not just about older women with menopause, if you do that, you will stimulate your ovaries to produce testosterone, which is a great hormone and very useful to women, but no progesterone, and the progesterone lack, progestation, your eggs don't mature. You end up with little cysts all over your ovaries, which can pop and be very painful and have very painful periods, and sometimes doctors will even... one thing they do often is actually put young women on birth control pills, which actually makes the situation worse because it artificially lowers and suppresses your native progesterone and adds in a form of progesterone that is carcinogenic and doesn't take care of the calming effect, doesn't have the effect on the brain that the natural progesterone does. So it stops the symptoms artificially in their tracks, and then if you ever go off them, you're kind of in a world of hurt until you get your progesterone levels back up. And the diet, too. I mean, if too much sugar, this is insulin levels going up, causing changes in the way that your sex hormones work. Greasy hair, acne. The other thing that can happen is women who are extremely high in estradiol often will have this thickening of the walls of the uterus. And this can also happen in young women, and they'll have very, very heavy periods. And again, need progesterone for that. In men, when they're medicating themselves with sugar and starch, it contests and lowers their testosterone, raises their cortisol. You end up with men who look rather pregnant, and increases their estrogen, which causes their prostate to swell. Because prostate very sensitive to estrogens. It used to be in your undifferentiated fetus, a prostate and a uterus are the same tissue. So the prostate's very sensitive to estrogen. When men get heavy, overweight, fat, in fact, they put on a lot of estrogen, and belly fat is predictive. You see a lot of truncal fat on men. Women, low progesterone. So keeping your blood sugars and your insulin at an even keel is going to actually make your menopause or your andropause or your long-term hormone health, if you're a young person, 100 times better at least. And that's very simply eating enough natural, non-fake fats, not margarine, not strange combinations of delicate vegetable oils whipped up and pumped up with various things to make them seem like butter, but just really honest-to-God butter and other natural, undamaged, unprocessed fats, if possible organic fats, since fats do harbor pesticides. So fat and protein and lots of vegetables and small amounts of fruit, because it's got sugar but balanced with fat and nuts and things like that, and letting go of the use of starches as a dependent source of food. You know, if you're going to eat them, you want to eat them in their most rough form, so bread and all the comfort foods, the pastas and things like that, in the long run are not comfort foods because they will send your hormones into a bizarre state of imbalance, which will not be comforting. So in that moment in your mouth, it may be comforting, but as it goes down and creates havoc in your hormone system, not so much. So I would suggest either getting rid of starches or eating only starches that are in their natural form, so very rough grains that are cooked as grains or porridges, or sometimes, yams or something. Decrease your alcohol intake. Alcohol in women it's in men, too. It's very disruptive to the hormone system, and the recent studies that have come out talking about alcohol consumption and breast cancer are pretty credible studies. It's not surprising, considering the kinds of pathways that alcohol goes to. Obviously, having a single drink once in a while is not going to do this, but if you drink all the time and you drink, women often drink far more than they think they're drinking because they drink wine and there's a bottle open and they imagine that they're having one glass and they're getting uncomfortable and warm and a little buzzy, and so they don't even know how much they actually drank, in my experience. So I see people, even women who have had breast cancer, have a terrible time turning away from alcohol. But I would really recommend having, if any, very small amounts to protect your hormone balance. It's no surprise, and I feel like I'm a nag, so I'll call myself the nag, that you must increase your rest and your relaxation. This is one of the reasons for lowering stimulants. And I might add in here, again, as the nag, that you remember that one of the stimulants you're exposed to are radio frequency radiation in the forms of cell phones and BlackBerries and Trios. And not only are we in a hyper alert or ready to go and in touch every second mode, but those technologies cause testable hyper arousal in people. So that is another stimulant. So ease up your exposure to that. Watch, notice what's happening to you, because those stimulating and non-resting and constant hyperarousal states are predictive of hormone imbalance and, like I said, downstream a world of hurt and cancer. Because when your hormones are horribly out of balance, that gives an opportunity for your immune system to be under siege in a way that doesn't enable it to handle cancer cells when they arise, because it's your immune system is responsible for them. And hormone balance, where your hormones are not horribly high in one area and low and this and that, is very protective of cancer. And I will go over some of that in a moment as well. Exercise, again, the nag, maintains testosterone in both genders, and testosterone is responsible for a kind of evening out of your emotional state, but also bone mass and lean body mass and, you know, kind of good hormone balance. I'm not suggesting that everybody slather themselves with testosterone. You want to always test your levels. But having native amounts of testosterone that are robust from exercising regularly, having good muscle mass and being leaner, having more muscle to fat ratio on your body from exercise is going to maintain good hormone balance. It also, exercise will increase the clearance of hormones out of your body through your liver. It helps you not bioaccumulate hormones, and there are many of them in the atmosphere these days, or even the ones that your body makes. You need to be able to clear those out. And then exercise also reduces cancer risk. Not at all surprising. Shouldn't be surprising. It isn't surprising. So basically, to go back over what I said just very quickly, stress predicts accelerated aging. Menopause, in a sense, is aging and aging as stress, and as that can occur more disruptively depending on the amount of stress you're under. Stress and aging have a handshake. Your hormones, including your progesterone, is made from cholesterol. So driving your cholesterol down is not going to be a good moment for your sex hormones. And in women, there is no evidence in the studies of heart disease from high cholesterol. So don't worry about the cholesterol. Worry about your stress and your inflammation. Your symptoms that you get when you're going through changes, hormonal changes, are caused by a loss of balance in the ratio between the hormones. They all work together. And the first thing to go in women in menopause in the early years before you stop bleeding is progesterone, which is calming and makes your periods better. In whether you're high estrogen or low estrogen, a little bit of progesterone usually enables whatever estrogen's around to work better. And watch your starch and stress, because that will throw your balance off even more and make everything more difficult. And you can also protect your blood sugars and insulin, both with your diet, by watching starch and sugar and not medicating yourself that way, and remembering that if you medicate yourself with exercise, your mood will be better and it will stay better, and you will be addressing the underlying cause of disruptive symptoms instead of smushing over them with a imprudent dietary choice or drink. So that takes us up to needing to take a short break. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. Today I'm alone, although Jeff is on the scene, Jeff Fawcett, PhD. I'm talking about menopause, and we're going to just break for a moment here, let you listen to a little bit of Billie Holiday, and I will be back very briefly. Please stay with me for more information on menopause.
What's new? How is the weather treating you? You haven't changed a bit. Lovely as ever, I must admit. What's new? How did that romance come through? We haven't met since then. Gee, but it's nice to see you again. What's new? Probably I'm boring you, but seeing you is grand. And you were sweet.
Welcome back. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 600 archive shows with our library card feature. Get a free stream of this week's show, our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. If you want to reach us, you can do that by email at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. And today we're talking about menopause. And I am speaking to you alone and hoping to actually change your mind about menopause in various ways, since there's actually a lot of prominent people in the media who are producing books and appearing on talk shows and talking now, among other things, about bioidenticals. So I'm going to sort of take that on in this next half here of the show on menopause. Again, I'm Lena Berman. One of the lessons, one of the primary lessons of all of this, including that the body does things for a reason, is the lesson of biological uniqueness. Some people don't have symptoms going through menopause. They don't. Some cultures have less women going through symptoms. There are enormous biological differences, and some of it is going to be predicted by stress. Some of it is just a question of how much estrogen you started out with. It's extremely different for everybody, and it happens at a different time for everybody. And it is supported by nutrient density, as I said before, good diet, certainly taking some supplements prophylactically, vitamin C, antioxidants, all the rest. Since you're aging, it is aging and stress management. And stress management in the more obvious sense of trying to make good decisions about how you use your brain, how to calm yourself down using usual techniques of exercise and meditation and company, good company. Not so much drugs and alcohol and starch and sugar. And rebalancing the hormones gently. Doses, for this reason, must be individualized to restore balance. You're not trying to replace these hormones so that somebody is back to being 20 years old. That's, or even back to having menstruation, necessarily. I don't think that that's necessary at all. There's nothing in any of the literature that I've read that indicates that. So what you're trying to do is very gently restore balance between the hormones, less about replacing them and increasing them, but more about balancing them. And we talked about adding progesterone in the early stages. And the reason that we look to balance here is because hormone balance at any age is the first place to look when women or men have symptoms of depression, insomnia, cognitive problems, really can't think their way out of a paper bag, and also often thyroid, low thyroid or thyroid disease will cause an enormous amount of depression, anxiety, and terrible mood disorders. You know, I've said it several times already during this little lecture that hormones work together in ratio, and balance causes symptoms. Too much or too little will cause symptoms. There's a very steep dose response curve with hormones, and that means that when you are working your way up to a sweet spot for hormones where you feel really good and you test, maybe do a test, and you see that it looks pretty good, you looks like physiologic levels, if you then increase above that amount, you will very quickly go down the other side and start having some of exactly the same symptoms you had when you were taking none and felt like you were needed them. So in other words, too much or overdosing with hormones will shut down the receptor sites and cause terrible symptoms again. Women who take too much estrogen will feel very low in estrogen because their tissues can't respond. One of the problems I'm seeing with these people in the media and doctors who are famous now, some of them PhDs, specializing in bioidentical hormones and appearing in Suzanne Summers and all these people, I hope I don't get sued. I'm really glad that they're bringing to light the use of the bioidenticals, meaning that these are non-patented hormones. They match the molecular structure that your body makes. They are synthesized in a lab, but they are made to be identical to the ones that your body makes. And oddly enough, the drug companies have been famous for changing the molecular structure so that they can own the patent or the formula and charge more. Horse estrogens are indeed bioidentical to a horse. They do contain an extra estrogen that we don't make, so the ratios of the estrogens are a little funny. That said, it except for the horror that occurs when they collect this from pregnant mares and what they do to the mares, which is enough to turn most of us off from buying the product, it has worked reasonably well, but it has been partnered with a synthetic form of progesterone, which is called, among other things, it's methyl pyridoxy, you know, goes on and on, it has this chemical name, but it's the brand name is Provera. This is what's been used in all the studies. And for at least 20 years, the studies have shown that this substance, this synthetic form, this non-bioidentical form of progesterone, causes cancer. So I'm going to go back to the WHI studies in a moment when we talk about whether or not to even do this, whether you should even consider doing this hormone replacement stuff. But the bioidenticals match. But what's happening is the sort of famous people who are doing this and who appear to have credentials and are making themselves well known is that they're using bioidenticals, but they're using them in extremely high doses. Now, if you use them in extremely high doses and they're pretty balanced, you may be able to get away with this in the sense that women may feel okay, although in my experience, after seeing people like this, they're suddenly having horrible symptoms because they're so overdosed. So they're having migraines and they're having horrible hyperarousal and they feel just nutty. Some people like feeling that way. They like being really pumped up and they like being very hyper aroused and energetic and having periods again and all this kind of stuff. So the overdosing works if you're kind of a speed demon or a speed freak. It isn't healthy to do that, hormones are growth factors. And although I don't believe that delicately balanced and the correct ratios of sex hormones throughout life are going to give people cancer, because when we look at the studies, what we see in women whose hormone levels were well balanced and in good ratios, that if they do get a little cancer, a little breast cancer or something, that if you leave that alone, if you make sure that their balance is good and their progesterone is good, they survive well and their cancers are very insignificant. And some of them are not even really cancers. Some of them are DCIS, which is calcium traces left by a cancer event that your body mopped up. So this business of castrating women with Lupron and tamoxifen, and there's new brands, there's all these new brands of these basically chemical castrations, because they've had cancer is silly, because the studies show that the proper ratio of sex hormones in the right dosages, in a physiologic dose for the age that you're at, what it does is sex hormones help the cells to maintain something called individuation. What this means is that if you biopsy a liver that has cancer, and you look at a cell from the liver, it looks like a liver cell. If you choose a cancer cell from the same liver, it looks like a cancer cell. You don't know where it came from. It's a cancer cell. It loses its individuation. And sex hormones are wonderful at maintaining individuation in the cells. This is one of the reasons that women, when they're pregnant and just really high in hormones, don't tend to die of cancer while they're in that state. And if sex hormones were so dangerous when they were high, you would think that women who were pregnant might get them, but they're very protective ratios of these hormones, lots of progesterone and stuff, lots of estriol, which is a weak estrogen. So what I'm concerned with is that there is a big push for bioidenticals, so much so that some other doctors now are giving synthetic patented hormones to women and calling them biosimilar to confuse them. Yes, this makes me angry. And they're not biosimilar, they're different. And unless they say bioidentical, unless the name of the product is just the name of the hormone with no chemical name, that's a bioidentical hormone. It matches your molecular structure, and they're usually not that expensive, honestly, either. Usually achieved, the best place to get them is usually compounding pharmacies, but all of the pharmaceutical companies, in fact, do have bioidentical hormones as well. You just have to rein in your doctor to prevent them from overdosing you, or to see somebody else who doesn't do that. So it is a challenge finding someone who has done the reading and the studying and actually knows enough about endocrinology. In my experience, it takes a very small amount, a very low dose of hormone, to achieve the effect of backing the symptoms down and maintaining a vitality and evenness to your life, a capacity to be able to think, leanness, you know, not having to worry about losing your secondary sex characteristics, which is what your estrogen does, so not losing your waist. Women who go through menopause without treatment often become barrel-shaped, not all. Some people have no problem with menopause. Some people need help. Some people don't. Some people only need progesterone. So it's very, very, very individualized. And overdosing is naughty and obstreperous and very uncomfortable, and it's what gives bioidenticals a bad name, honestly, because that is more dangerous to do, in my opinion. Okay, so what do? We've already talked about the problems with these bad people out there who overdose and who push the idea of overdosing. You don't need to be 12 or 15 again. You're very good just being as you are and rebalancing. So how do you do this? Well, first, the first step is testing. I prefer saliva testing, although blood testing is possible. They are a little harder to read because you are looking at all of the hormones in your bloodstream, and some of the hormones in your bloodstream, depending on your uniqueness, can be stuck to the red cells. This is called bound. These are bound hormones. You want to see free hormones, and the only ones that are available in the free forms in blood tests are when you test thyroid, you can get free T3 T4 and free T3, which are the two thyroid hormones. But a lot of doctors won't test the free T3, which is a painful thing because it's the active form of thyroid. If you're not converting T4 to T3, you don't feel good. But in terms of specifically the sex hormones, the only ones that are free is testosterone. It's the only one that's available in a free form. I increasingly also am seeing blood tests that come under my nose that are doing something called free and weekly bound. And I'm thinking, why are we even bothering? Why can't we just do the free level so we know what's getting to the tissue sites? I don't want to know. I mean, the way to know how much of your hormone is bound is you can check to see how much of the hormone that causes the bounding, if I can, that's not English, but is there, and that's called sex hormone binding globulin, SHBG. This is your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman doing a show today on menopause. So an easier way to do this, because people can look as though they've got plenty of hormone and it's bound up and they're not getting the benefits of it because it's not getting to the tissues. So when you do saliva, and you know people can do urine too, so you have a choice about what you want to choose. You do in California need a healthcare provider to order these, and so you test the levels. It's pretty simple, right? And what you see, I mean, one of the things that people say is they go, well, you're just going to be looking at one day's worth of it, so how will we know how it varies? And, you know, don't have to worry about that. What you really want to know is what's the ratio between estrogen and progesterone, how high, you know, where's the testosterone, how's the DHEA, what's the cortisol doing, and how does it look in the morning, and then does it repair itself at night if it's get low or is it high? And these are all of these things tell the practitioner what it is that's going on and how to, both with dietary changes and some lifestyle changes and some nutrients and some hormones, to rebalance the scene. So we're dealing with three different estrogens, as I said. The only one that most of us test for, some of them will test all three estrogens. The one that's going to be the primary cause for symptoms and not symptoms is estradiol. Estradiol. Estradiol, its short is E2. It's the second estrogen. The first estrogen is estrone. I don't concern myself too much with it, because if a woman is taking estradiol and if she does use a little bit of estriol, which is E3, Estriol, then she'll make estrone. But also, estrone is made in the fat cells of the body, and most women have enough estrone on board. And estrone is one of those hormones, like estradiol, not so much with estriol, that is potentially provocative because it's very, very vulnerable to exposure to pollutants. That's why women should not take synthetic forms of this. Chemicals, it doesn't metabolize correctly. Should not smoke, should not drink too much alcohol, and should be careful about pesticides and cleaning products and what you're exposed to in the environment, because the estradiol and estrone in your body can go down a bad pathway and start damaging DNA. It's not easy for this to happen. It actually is pretty difficult to have it happen. Not everybody gets cancer, but stress does make this process more likely. And alcohol and the rest of it. So that's why I want to be very delicate with these hormones. I don't replace estrone. Estrace is a brand. It is bioidentical, and certainly it's one of the brands that is. So estradiol is the primary one, and if you need it at all, it's always something that you take in an extremely low dose. There are patches. These hormones always, always, always should go through the skin, because you are going directly to the tissue sites and you are avoiding the first pass through the liver. You don't want these hormones to go through your digestive system and then go to your liver. Your stomach is going to degrade the amount, so you're going to have an uneven or unpredictable amount in your system. The doses orally are going to be it's not, when you put something through the skin, it's like 10 to 30 times stronger than a oral dose. It's put it that way. This is one of the mistakes that doctors make, is that they'll give somebody an oral dose through the skin, which is like a huge overdose. So don't put it through the skin. They like to go through the fat cells into your bloodstream. Estradiol is available in patches. It's available in creams. Doctors often start with doses that are high. I like very small doses because it's much easier to go up than down, because your cells respond, the receptors will respond to a dose, and then getting your dose down after it's been too high is much more uncomfortable than gradually increasing it, because you have something called up and down regulation in your receptors. You start taking a hormone and your body has been deprived of it, and it'll go, wow, this is really cool, this is so good, and you'll feel like you're flying for the first few days. And then your cells start to upregulate and add extra receptors to take up the extra hormone, and then it balances out and eases up a little bit, and you kind of see whether that's the right dose. If you overdose, you either overwhelm the receptors and then you feel like you're low estrogen again, or you have to lower the dose and you start having like withdrawal symptoms. So going low and then starting very slowly is my preferred way of doing it. And the doses that I suggest are low enough so that people, you know, when doctors or prescribers actually look at the dose, they go, oh, well, that's very low, so don't worry about it. Or they say, sometimes compounders will say, oh, this is not going to work. So low dose, very low dose, and estradiol, and then estriol is the right thing to use if you have vaginal dryness. It's been used in Europe for the last many, many decades, probably up close to 30 years now. Intervaginally, can be used in a fair dose once every 4 days. That's all. And it will be taken up by the vaginal mucosa only as much as it needs. So you're not going to overdose yourself. I mean, you conceivably could if you really tried, but it tends not to take up more than needs. And you can feel when you need it again. It's very easy. Your tissues will feel right if you need it, and feel raw and irritated if you don't. So putting estradiol in the vaginal canal tends to be irritating, and it's not really the right estrogen for that. And some doctors are telling people that it's not going to be absorbed systemically, which is nonsense. Anything that goes through your skin into your mucosa is going to go into your bloodstream. So it's not my suggestion to do that. I think it's better to use the estradiol topically on your skin, and estriol or E3 vaginally if you need it. Not everybody has that problem right away with the dryness. And also, some women only need progesterone too. Keep that in mind. And progesterone should be through the skin as well, and not overdosed, because overdosing on progesterone will make you feel sedated and tired and a little depressed. Maybe even make your breasts feel sore if you're overdoing it. Then we have the progesterone in the right dose. Some of it you can tell by symptoms. Do a test at the beginning, and then depending on how they feel, at some point retest to see whether the levels are in the right ratio to each other and not ridiculously high. You also want to check for testosterone, bone mass, and vitality, and sex drive, and all sorts of things. Does not immediately cause women to break out in great bits of hair and lower their voice, only if it's overdosed. Very small doses for women, 0.25 milligram, 1 milligram, maybe, usually that's enough. DHEA, an adrenal hormone, it is a precursor, it makes other sex hormones. Always test it first. Women never need more than 25 milligrams. It's taken orally usually, can be taken other ways, but DHEA, delicately. Sometimes it's only 5 or 10 milligrams. Some people don't need it at all. If you've been suffering from some metabolic disruption because of blood sugar abnormalities, your DHEA and testosterone will be pretty high. And then cortisol. Boy, we do not like to see cortisol get high at night. So that's, you know, there's a lot of balancing techniques for cortisol, and progesterone is one of them. Should you replace hormones? Is it natural? Well, is it natural to be sitting and listening to the radio? Is it natural to read under a light at night? We aren't living a natural life. We've already made a decision to enhance our lives. Studies on women after cancer, as I said, show that well-balanced hormones protect them and they survive better. WHI studies, despite what the papers said about, oh, look out, actually what we found out is that when they did the first test, we found out that Provera causes cancer again. They took the Provera out, they redid it, they did it with estrogen alone. And yes, estrogen is cloddy if you take it alone. And that's what they did. They took it alone, and everyone took the same dose. Well, you never take estrogen alone. You take it with progesterone and maybe testosterone. And these women had hysterectomies, and their testosterone levels were very low. Women with hysterectomies have very low testosterone levels. But what we did notice in that study, if you read it carefully, and you didn't get a copy of it when you read the paper, I got a copy of it and went through it, is that the incidence of breast cancer went down by very close to half, and other forms of cancers like colon cancer went down. Estrogen's a good player in the right dose without synthetic progesterone, with natural bioidentical, not biosimilar, progesterone through the skin. Again, just to remind you, biggest mistake, overdosing. This dose response curve is very, very steep. Up you go, little sweet spot at the top, and then down into awfulness if you overdose. Too much increases your deficiency symptoms, shuts down the receptors, and it's harder to go down than to go up slowly. And as I said, another way to maintain balance, another decision when you think about whether to replace hormones, is think of it as maintaining a good ratio, not about replacing and whether that's natural, but about maintaining a good balance. I mean, most of us are trying to live longer, and we're trying to live independently, and you've got bone mass considerations and brain considerations and vitality considerations. None of this has to be done aggressively. This should be done delicately. It should be done in the interest of maintaining the balance that nature taught us about. So you're mimicking nature when you do this, not overriding it or suppressing it. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for easier extended access to our over 600 archive shows with our library card feature. Get a free stream of this week's show, our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. If you want to reach us, please email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.